and help me pick up my shit. Keep your head lower than your knees. Anne did as she was told. Frances, it turned out, had a great deal of stuff in her handbag. Toys, sweets, coins, a pack of cards that spilled helpfully across the grass. A little Hot Wheels car, a bottle of bubble solution, several pens, several pen lids, none of which went together, and so on and so forth. Frances knelt on the grass in front of the bench, shielding Anne while they picked up the contents of her bag. Feeling better? Anne kept her head down, and a sob escaped her.
No.
Frances made a soft noise of support, such as one might make to a child, and touched Anne on the knee. Anne, you messed up, but you're here now for your kids, and you need to pull it together. You are not going to throw up or freak out. You are going to let the blood flow back into your extremities, and once you're able to stand up again, we'll find the kids, and you will be good once you see them, all right?
If they want to see me, if Charlie will let me.
He told you to come here, right? Frances looked worried suddenly. You're not just turning up unexpectedly. Anne shook her head, gathering the playing cards together and searching for a rubber band or something to keep them together. Frances handed her a black-covered hair elastic, which worked just fine.
No, I'm invited.
Excellent. Frances looked relieved.
He's coming,
Anne said, and suddenly sat up. The blood restored, the nausea subsided, the inner anxiety reduced just by seeing her husband, even though he hated her now. She tried to smile. He'd always loved her smile. Charlie didn't smile back. Instead, he spoke to Frances.
Nice to know whose side you're on, Frances.
Frances sat back on her heels and looked up at him. He was barely holding it together. Don't be silly, Charlie. She looked like she was about to pass out, and rather than give the local witches something even juicier to talk about, I helped. I hope he would do the same for me. He shook his head.
Not if you cheated on your husband and ruined the happiness of your children. You'd be just as big a bitch as she is.
He looked at his wife with disgust.
I'd have let her fall, personally.
Frances stood up. I'm glad to see you're handling this so well. I'm going back to my kids now, before I say something we both have to live with for years. She turned back to Anne and smiled. Sorry, Anne. I hope you feel better. Apparently soccer was over, because behind them they heard Kate and Theo happily calling to their mother, and thundering in their direction. Frances walked away, and the kids passed her going top speed. Her own kids were waiting for her, watching her come with trusting expressions. There were juice boxes in their future, and possibly ice cream.
Is Anne okay?
Shelley had stepped into her path, looking concerned in a way that suddenly pissed Frances off. Shelley barely knew Anne. She just wanted to be the one who knew the scoop. Sure, replied Frances, not slowing down very much.
Can you believe she cheated on Charlie? He's so nice. Those poor kids. So selfish, right?
Shelley made a little clicking sound with her tongue. Frances still didn't slow down, but she looked at Shelley and raised her eyebrows.
You know absolutely nothing about it, Shelley, and you should keep your ill-formed and unwelcome judgments to yourself. Maybe your life is a well-orchestrated series of elegant vignettes with perfect photo opportunities every 10 minutes. But if you're anything like the rest of us, then you're lurching from one near disaster to the next, crossing your legs every time you cough so you don't pee your pants after having had 4 children.
Shelley just stared at her, her mouth open.
That's what I thought, said Frances, walking by and farting silently as she went.
She was opposed to chemical warfare on principle, but sometimes you just had to go with what you had at hand. 25. Theo and Kate were beyond excited to see their mom, which wasn't surprising, thought Charlie. He had felt the usual warm feeling, too, for a nanosecond.
habituated neurons firing as they always had. It takes a while for the head to catch up with the heart, it would seem. He was so incredibly angry with Anne, it took all he had not to scream at her or slap her, something he had never, ever even been remotely tempted to do to her, or to anyone. But he didn't, because his kids were beaming and hanging on her, and she was smiling down at them as if she hadn't just thrown away their happiness for a fuck. 2 days earlier, after he had spoken to the school principal, he had forced himself to call his wife.
"It's me."
"I'm so sorry, Charlie. I really never..."
She had started crying as soon as she saw his name on her phone. Ice Charlie Porter. Would he even come in an emergency now? She'd have to change that along with every other single aspect of her life. He couldn't have been further from tears.
"Save it. We need to tell the children together. I just met with the principal. She persuaded me that it's better for them."
There was a pause.
"What are we going to tell them?"
"We're going to tell them that we're not being very good friends right now, and that you're going to move out for a while so we can stay friends. That we love them just as much, that we are still their mom and dad, and that it has nothing to do with them."
"You're not going to tell them about what I did?"
"Not today. Today we're just going to tell them what's going to happen. Are you able to do that? Mrs. Garcia said it's better if we both do it. But if you're going to fall apart, I'll do it alone."
For a split second, Anne remembered how cold he had been on the phone, as she hugged her children on this hot Saturday afternoon and looked up at him. He looked like he could punch her any minute. And although she had never been afraid of him before, not even fleetingly, now she dropped her gaze.
"Where do you want to go, my loves?"
"Focus on the kids, Anne." Kate shouted out for ice cream, but Theo looked confused.
"Aren't we just going home?"
His dad's voice came from behind him.
"Mommy isn't living there right now, remember?"
Theo frowned and turned to face his father.
"But she can still visit, right? She's still our mom."
He turned back to Anne and tugged on her hand.
"You can come to my room, Mom."
"And mine," Kate said jealously. "We can play Littlest Pet Shop."
Theo was scornful.
"She doesn't want to play that."
Anne would have given her right arm to play Littlest Pet Shop with Kate, as if nothing was wrong. But she tried not to show it. She waited for Charlie to give her permission to visit her own house, a house that was half in her name, a house she could choose to forcibly occupy if she wanted. Charlie was wrestling with competing desires. On the one hand, he wanted Anne nowhere near his house, but he also wanted his kids to feel safe, loved, and on his side. He was so ashamed of this feeling that he immediately said Anne could come, of course.
"I want to ride with Mom," Kate said, jumping up and down. "Did you get a new car?"
Anne shook her head. "No, I walked here. We can all just go home together." The words came out smoothly, but she suddenly needed to use the bathroom, her gut twisting at the thought of walking into her house. But her face showed nothing, and together they all walked to their car, just like it was any other Saturday. Walking into his house behind his wife, Charlie nearly lost it when Anne went to hang her keys on the hook, then realized she didn't live there anymore. Like a sound wave, her pain passed back from her to him, the whole moment lasting maybe half a second. He wanted to cut out this connection to her like a tumor. He wanted to wind back his arm and throw a ball of shared history arcing out over the ocean, an unheard splash, unrecoverable. But he couldn't forget loving Anne any more than he could forget a second language spoken every day for a decade. She was in the curls of his brain. His eyes had recorded and decoded her tiniest expression. They'd seen and codified her fear, her caution, her passion, her childbirth, her laughter. His hands had touched her intimately, aroused her, held her hair while she threw up, carried her into their first house, wiped her brow in fever, handed her diapers and wipes, brought her coffee. He'd smelled her perfume, her blood, her hair, her bad morning breath. He'd heard her voice, possibly every word and tone her larynx was capable of. She was talking now, asking the kids if they were hungry, as if she was still their mother, which of course she was, and always would be. Suddenly he hated her with each and every one of the senses that had loved her so thoroughly for so long.
"I'll get them a snack," he said roughly, pushing past her, aware he'd made her step sideways, knowing by that brief touch that she'd lost weight, that she was barely holding it together. "Get out of my head," he wanted to scream. "Disappear from the earth and never have existed, all of you."
"Is there raisin toast?" Kate asked.
He smiled at her and nodded. For a moment, he had the mad thought he was cheating on his children by pretending to be okay, when in fact, he was clinging to sanity with only the tiniest sliver of fingernail. He wondered if this was how Anne felt, if the distance between her inside and her outside had been that yawning a chasm. Well, he was holding it together for the kids, and she should have too, the bitch. He pulled two pieces of raisin bread from the bag and put them in the toaster, pushing down the lever hard enough the first time, rather than having to do it over and over, as so often happened. See? Broken on the inside, capable on the outside. The kids had run upstairs to change out of their soccer stuff, and Anne watched her husband standing by the toaster, apparently guarding the little machine from attack. He'd made it stay down the first time. She could never do that. It was fussy, that toaster, maybe the fifth one they'd had in as many years. How come they couldn't make toasters that lasted anymore? Her grandparents had had the same toaster her whole childhood, one with enamel sides with blue flowers on them, drawn by what must have been a drunken artist with a shaky hand, his blue pencil wavering as he drew those long stems and petals. Charlie was angry. She could see it in his shoulders, and she ached for him more than she'd ever ached for anything. The toast popped, and she watched him butter it for Kate with quick, efficient movements, getting the butter to the edges. No further. He loved his kids so much, and he would never love her again. He turned and carried the toast past her, the cool breeze of his passing sweetened by the smell of raisins. "Charlie," she said, her voice breaking.
"Toast,"
he replied, walking out of the room. She waited for him in the kitchen, but he didn't come back. Looking around, she noticed how much tidier it was now that she no longer lived there. Who would have guessed she was the messy one? She went upstairs, but her bedroom door was closed, so she went to Kate's room. Kate was out of her soccer uniform, but had clearly been interrupted by the arrival of the toast, because she was wearing leggings and socks, but no top. Anne brushed toast crumbs from her daughter and pulled a little sweatshirt over her head. Then she sat down in the glider where she'd rocked this child from birth and pulled Kate onto her lap. "How's school? Anything fun happen?" Kate nodded, her smooth hair brushing Anne's chin.
"Ella got a kitten. We wanted to call it Yellowy, but her mom called it Butterscotch."
She pulled her head away from Anne and looked at her.
"Isn't that a dumb name? What does that even mean?"
Anne was surprised. "It's a kind of candy, and kind of a color, too. Sort of a browny yellow."
"Oh!"
Kate nodded again, light dawning.
"I get why it's a good name, then."
There was a small pause.
"Why can't you be living with us anymore?"
Kate's voice was soft.
"Daddy can go away and you can come back."
Anne was still thinking of the kitten and scrambled to catch up. "I can't, baby. Daddy and I aren't friends right now, and..."
"You told me it's not nice to stay mad when someone said sorry already. You told me that when Liesl at school melted my Easter chicken, and I was so angry and she was crying, remember?" "I remember that."
Anne remembered. Yes, that's right. It's better to forgive someone when they...
And you said sorry, right? You said sorry, didn't you?
Surely her mother wouldn't forget this very basic first step. Anne nodded. Mindlessly, she noticed Kate's bedroom was as tidy as the kitchen. He'd had the cleaners in. It wasn't her bad influence. It was his readiness to throw money at a problem.
Well, then, Daddy should let you come home and be friends again.
Kate started to squirm off Anne's lap.
I'll go tell him. Maybe he didn't hear you.
Anne held her hand. He heard me, sweetheart, but he's just still really mad. I did a bad thing, and it might take more than sorry. Kate frowned at her.
There is no more than sorry.
Anne swallowed. Do you remember when I told you that when you say mean things, it makes little holes in people? Do you remember that? She'd read this analogy on Facebook or something, about nails in wood or some such thing. Some deep thing that made her nod thoughtfully and feel a tiny pain in her heart. And that when you say sorry, it's like covering those holes. It helps, but it doesn't make the holes go away forever, remember?
Yes? You broke a plate.
Theo's voice came from the doorway. Anne looked up, and Kate turned to face her brother. I did? Anne didn't remember that. You'd think she'd remember that. Theo nodded.
Kate wasn't there. It was after Ollie and I got into a fight at school, and you had to come in and see Mrs. Garcia, remember?
It came back to her.
You were super mad, and you took a plate out of the cupboard, and you said that when I said hurtful things to someone, it was like breaking a plate. And then you smacked the plate on the counter, and it broke in two. And then you put both pieces together and said, look, see? It's fixed, but there's still a crack. There will always be a crack, you said.
Anne frowned. Shit. When she'd performed this magnificently meaningful symbolic piece of parenting, she hadn't considered this outcome.
But the plate still worked, right?
Kate looked anxious.
Even if you and Daddy are cracked, you can still be together, right?
She looked at her older brother, whose face was so still it might have been porcelain itself.
They can be together again if she says sorry and he says thank you and lets her come back, right?
Her brother shrugged at her. 10, so much more resigned to ambiguity than 6. I did say sorry, honey. But Daddy's still really angry, and he needs some time apart. Like when you get mad and you want to be alone in your room for a while to calm down, right? Kate was visibly struggling, and Anne suddenly wondered if all these allegories and examples and parallels were helping her understand, or if they were just things Anne could say in the face of inexplicable pain. If the people of Pompeii had built a baking soda and vinegar model of a volcano as schoolchildren, would that have made their sudden, disastrous demise more relatable? Would they have been like, oh, hey, we've seen this before. We know how this is working. Yes, we're all about to die in an instant of suffocating heat that cooks our lungs and roasts our beating hearts and our chests. But we get how it works, so, you know, that's something. We know how, even if we are still blaming the gods for why. Kate didn't look like she was understanding any of it, and her expression said her heart was running the show, because let's face it, her brain was letting things go to serious shit around here. The little girl suddenly left the room. As Theo and Anne looked at each other, she realized the expression on her son's face was pity. Down the hall, Kate was tearful but optimistic.
Mommy says she's sorry, Daddy. She's really sorry, okay?
Anne got to her feet. She reached her own bedroom in time to hear Charlie say,
I know she is, baby cakes, but I think it's too late for that.
Kate stamped her foot.
It's never too late for sorry. You told me that last week when you found the pudding.
That was different.
No. Mommy did something bad. She didn't tell you, just like me and the pudding. And then when you found out, she said sorry.
And I helped you clean it up, didn't I? Even though it was all sticky, I helped you. And I said sorry, and you said it was okay.
She started to cry.
So why is it too late for Mommy to say sorry?
Mommy did more than make a mess, honey. It was a grown-up thing. It doesn't matter what she did. It's done, and it can't be cleaned up.
Charlie looked up at his wife standing in their bedroom doorway, and all he wanted to say was, please come home and let's never, never talk about this again. Let's pretend it never happened. Let's rip the pages out of the fucking calendar and move to another state and start over. But that couldn't work, because the knowledge would linger under his skin like a keloid, and he'd rub it absentmindedly during every silence that fell in their marriage from that moment on. Anne saw all this on his face, even as she noticed he was wearing the boxer shorts she'd given him for Christmas many years before. Reindeer on skis. She couldn't see from here, but she knew the flannel under his balls was wearing thin. Had thought a few months earlier that new holiday boxer shorts should be under the tree this year. Her stomach twisted at the thought of Christmas. Oh my God. His parents.
She said she's sorry.
Kate was losing it, her voice clogged with tears and her unblown nose.
You have to accept her apology. You have to. You're the one being mean now. You're the one who's doing the bad thing. You have to say sorry. You both have to say sorry.
She fell, sobbing to the floor, literally pulling on her own hair, her tiny fingers so furious at herself for not being able to make this right, not being a big enough girl to fix this. Until her brother pushed past his parents and joined her on the ground, pulling her onto his lap and rocking her, smoothing her hair and holding her fingers, letting her pinch him so hard, letting her punch and smack at his face. The only person in her life left to safely get angry at. He looked at his father, his eyes cold and unblinking. 10 years old. Battlefield promotion to adult, first grade. Anne turned and walked downstairs, unable to handle their pain. Coward. As she turned at the bottom of the stairs and stumbled out, she could hear her husband closing the bathroom door above her. She walked away from the house blindly, the door left open behind her, her children sitting alone on the bedroom floor, where they'd opened birthday presents and run for hugs and crossed for bad dreams in the middle of the night, totally alone. She was every bit the bad mother she'd always known she was, and had a car driven along the street at that very moment, she would have thrown herself in front of it with relief. 26. When Frances had come boiling back from soccer, full of ire at Shelley, and a certain amount of pride at being able to fart on cue, Michael had been surprisingly unsupportive. He had simply made a face at her and kept watching the football game on his computer. Frances frowned at him. You don't think I was right to get annoyed at her? Her husband shrugged, still keeping his eye on the ball.
I think you were judging her as much as she was judging Anne, to be honest. The farting I support completely.
Frances sat on the bed and looked at him.
But Shelley doesn't even know Anne. You don't know her all that well yourself. It's not like you and Iris. You and Anne were always, you know, different from each other. I would call you politely warm acquaintances.
Aren't you friends with Charlie?
Not really. I'd go get a beer with him. I'd definitely do a playdate or something with Theo and Milo. But would I confide my concerns about erectile dysfunction? Nope.
Do you have concerns about erectile dysfunction?
Nope.
Well then, not the point.
I'm clarifying degrees of friendship.
He sat back from the computer and regarded his wife thoughtfully.
There are those friends we're friends with because our kids are at school together. We are happy to see them at school events, birthday parties, etc. We hang out preferentially with them at stuff like that because we like them better and have more in common with them than other parents. Right? But you'd never invite them to dinner because you have about 45 minutes of conversation and that's about it.
Francis frowned. Like who?
Tracy and Arthur? Andrew and John? Dahlia's mom and dad? Whatever their names are.
Michael was clearly master of this material. Francis thought about it. He was right. People she liked, but had no real desire to know any better than she did already. But Anne and Charlie are different than that.
Because they're neighbors. And because that means Theo and Milo could potentially be friends outside of school, ergo, not a time-limited friendship. Plus, carpool, therefore a relationship of dependence.
He was about to steeple his fingers like a professor, but chose to scratch his armpit instead, keeping it classy. Since when did you get a degree in anthropology? Frances pulled off her sneakers, wondering if that was mud or dog shit. She threw the shoe under the bed either way. A doctor friend of hers had once told her the entire world was covered in a fine patina of shit particles. So why worry? Her husband answered easily.
Since I spend so much time in traffic and my mind wanders in circles.
He looked back at the game.
Anyway, then you have real, actual friends like Sam and Corey or Mark and Dana, who we became friends with when the kids were at preschool and are still friends with. Not friends we see all the time, but friends we hug and love and are always pleased to see. And more importantly, friends we would call in an emergency. Friends where we could show up in the middle of the night with our asses on fire and they'd run and get a bucket of water without asking questions. Friends where you could pull up in front of their house, dump the kids, and know they'd mind them no problem until you got back from evading the authorities or whatever.
He smiled lazily at her, sure of himself.
You wouldn't necessarily leave the kids with Anne. She's just too damn coordinated.
He corrected himself.
At least until now. Now she's just a hot mess.
He giggled suddenly. Francis looked at him. Have you been smoking pot while I've been out? There was a pause. She narrowed her eyes. You have, haven't you?
It's legal in California, you know.
I know. I'm just reframing this whole conversation and it's making a lot more sense. I don't give a shit if you had a hit or two of pot. You're not going anywhere. It's Saturday afternoon. You're still in your boxer shorts. But I'm paying less attention to your grand, overarching taxonomy of friendship. She tugged off her jeans and threw them at him. He reached up and caught them in midair.
See? Not so stoned I've lost my cat-like reflexes.
That's not as reassuring as you might think. She tugged on her sweatpants and slippers, not planning on going anywhere herself. Have you seen Ava? A thought occurred to her. Please tell me she didn't see you smoking pot. I'm having a hard enough time as it is. He shook his head.
No, I took the dogs for a walk and had a quick puff while I was doing it. No big.
You're a horrible example of a parent, and I'm going to see how she's getting on with her homework.
She's done, Michael replied. I already checked.
Then he made finger guns at her, and she rolled her eyes. You're a goober.
Maybe, he countered. But when this game is done, I promised Lally I would play My Little Pony with her, and thanks to my ungentled state, I'm even going to enjoy it.
He blew on his finger guns and holstered them. Francis couldn't argue with that. Game, set, and match. Papa Pothead. Even if ungentled wasn't actually a word. Ava was indeed finished with her homework and seemed in a good enough mood for Francis to risk sitting on her bed. What have you got planned for the rest of the day? Ava pulled her earbuds out and smiled at her mom. Nothing really. Got any suggestions? Francis considered. Want to go to the bookstore? Art supply store? Yeah. Ava got up and went to find shoes.
Frances felt elated momentarily. Score one for Mom and the offer of art supplies. She ran over her usual checklist to make sure she could leave the house. Lally was taken care of, the dogs were fed, dinner was going to be pizza. She went to check on Milo. Milo was lying on his bed reading, which was unusual enough for Frances to utter a noise of surprise. Her son looked up and grinned.
I'm not always on the computer, you know. I'm too hot after soccer.
He still had his cleats on, Frances noticed, with little perforated sheets of mud gradually drying and dropping onto his bed. She quite enjoyed these pieces of mud, the ones from cleats, because they looked as though they'd been crocheted by Mother Nature, like beach stones with holes in them, naturally occurring things that looked like they'd been made by people. Amusing. She stepped forward and tugged his shoes off his feet.
What are you reading?
She asked between tugs. He turned the book to show her. It was some graphic novel about a middle school kid, one of several series he loved and read and reread over and over again. Sometimes she would sit by his side at night and read them to him, even though you'd think a graphic novel wouldn't be a good read aloud. But they were. And whether the kids were wimpy, big, heroic, or whatever, he loved them all, and she loved them because he did. She'd pre-order them as soon as they were announced, sure of a moment of shared excitement. God bless books. I'm taking Ava to the art store. Do you want to come?
Nah, I'm good. Dad's here, right?
His mom nodded. He made a well-then noise, already back to his book. She looked at the curve at the back of his ear, the way his hair grew there, echoing the shape of Michael's hairline. The color was hers, but the thickness and wave were like her brother Alexander, long gone and never had a chance to be a favorite uncle, which he would have been. Milo was the child she understood least, even though in many ways he was the most like her. He was quiet, stable, pleasant, reliable. Precisely because he was so equable, she worried he got taken for granted at school. That he would suddenly blow a gasket, that he was hiding deep sadness or rage or something. Sometimes she would sit and talk to him for ages about Pokemon or Minecraft or Star Trek or whatever the heck it was he was obsessed with at that moment, and hope he might take the conversation in a more personal direction. But he rarely did. Had her brother been alive, he would have been her bridge to this child. But now she was on her own. Milo and Michael were easy companions, spending time building Legos or going to baseball games or any number of the classic father-son activities. Anytime she worried aloud about their son, Michael would look at her and roll his eyes.
He's fine, he would say. Stop forcing yourself to worry about something that isn't broken.
She squeezed Milo's shoulder, which he barely noticed, and left the room. 27. The art store was surprisingly busy, although Frances wasn't sure why it was surprising. This was not her store, not one of her regular haunts. She knew the people at the grocery store checkout by name, the Trader Joe's, the bookstore on Larchmont Boulevard, the coffee place, the juice place. Those were hers. This was Ava's, so she followed her daughter as she confidently moved around, looking for the little things she needed and the other things she wanted. A young man stepped out of her way, and then a moment later appeared around the corner of an aisle. He cleared his throat, and Frances looked up at him. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Don't I know you?
He asked, half frowning. He knew her face was familiar, but these days his sadness was confusing him. He often forgot what he was doing, or where he should be. Not a student, too old for that. Another teacher? Ava was looking from her mother to this totally hot guy, and for a split second wanted to giggle. Like her mom would know him. But still, maybe if she did... Ava grinned at the young man, and he smiled absently back, noticing the teen for the first time, and therefore starting to run through his Rolodex of students. Maybe this woman who seemed so familiar was just a mom he'd seen at the art college. But Frances was now literally backing away, shaking her head gently.
No, I don't think we know each other, sorry.
Ava hadn't seen his face the other day. She had no reason to learn who he was now. But Ava hadn't turned, and the guy was insistent.
No, I'm sure I've seen you before. I'm Richard Seitz. I'm a teacher at Otis.
The art school?
Ava had taken over the conversation. Frances had started to sweat, and now she took her daughter's sleeve and literally tugged.
Come on, Ava, we've got stuff to get.
She turned back to Richard, and her expression suddenly said, Look, go the fuck away. We definitely know each other, and either you're pretending not to know me, in which case I will fuck you up if you continue this charade, or you really have forgotten me, in which case you're in worse shape than I thought. He stepped back.
Sorry, my mistake.
I've sometimes thought about going to art school, and that's a good one, right?
Oh my God, Frances thought. Ava's flirting with this guy because, let's face it, he's cute and closer to her age than he is to Anne's. But there is simply no way this is happening. Richard was still not getting it.
It is. I'd be happy to show you around sometime if you like. We have open houses all the time.
He pulled out his wallet.
I'll give you my card. You can email me.
That's when Frances turned to look at him with an expression of extremely explicit warning, and Richard suddenly remembered who she was, where he'd seen her, and why she was tugging her cute little daughter away from him down the clay aisle. Ava was pissed.
Why wouldn't you let me talk to that guy?
She was sitting in the front seat, the art store bag on her lap, clearly simmering.
He was too old for you,
Frances replied, eyeing the ice cream store across the street. She wanted a milkshake so badly. No wonder she was overweight. She ate whenever she felt bad, which was more frequently than you might think. Also when she felt good, and sad and angry. Okay, she ate whenever she fucking felt like it. And having run through the familiar, I want to eat that. No, you're too fat. No, I'm a feminist and I reject your body-shaming bullshit. But what about your health?
What about my health?
Like you care about my health. You just want me to conform to some cultural norm. I'm talking about a milkshake, and I'm a grown-ass lady, and fuck you, thing. She suddenly turned the car off and got out. It was more than a milkshake. It was a political stand, and she was going to add malt. Ava didn't move, so Frances leaned down to the window.
Do you want ice cream? He wasn't too old for me, one. And two, ew, he was like 30. You shouldn't even be thinking about him like that. And I was only asking about school. I thought you wanted me to go to college.
Ava went to open the car door, and Frances stepped back to put money in the meter.
I do want you to go to college, but I didn't want you talking to some strange guy in an art store. He'd be asking you to pose nude next. Which would have been reasonable if he's an artist, right?
Ava wasn't as mad now because ice cream, and because she was finding this conversation amusing. They entered the store, with its high ceilings and metal tables and chairs and familiar faces.
Chocolate malted?
The guy at the counter had seen Frances so many times, and she never wavered. She didn't let him down and nodded. Unbeknownst to her, they called her Mommy Malted. Not that she would have cared.
And for you?
The guy looked at Ava, and his expression altered subtly. Not so subtly that Frances missed it, and it struck her that the days when she got that, hey, I see you, attractive young woman look, were long gone. She got friendly, she got recognition, eventually. But she no longer got physical awareness. She didn't mind, although she knew many women who hated it, who hated becoming slowly invisible, fading away. Like Marty McFly in his family photo.
I'll get a shake too. But cookies and cream, please.
Then Ava smiled at him. The smile that said, Hey, attractive young man, I see you, and I see you seeing me,
and it's nice that we see each other. Ciao, babe. Then they turned away to wait. So much communication, so little time. Ava turned her back on the cashier and spoke again to her mother. Like, if he's an artist and wants to draw me, that's a different getting nude than any other kind, right? Frances shook her head, looking at the cakes and cookies in the case. There was a blue velvet cake that perplexed her, even as she wanted to try it. No, and you know it. You're 14. You shouldn't even be thinking of getting nude. She paused, struggling to be honest. Actually, that's not true. At 14, you probably will be thinking about it a lot, but you shouldn't be doing it. She wrestled a little more, thinking back to her own teen years, her virginity lost at 15, quite happily, with a fellow 15-year-old she still knew on Facebook, and whose two sons were around the same age as Ava. Or at least, not with a man twice your age. Ava laughed. You just revised your position, like, 50 times in one sentence. She looked at her mom's face, pondering. You did know him, though, didn't you? She made the connection. Was he Anne's friend from the other day? Frances shrugged. Maybe he's a parent, or maybe I see him at the cafe a lot or something. You must have people like that, kids you see at school a lot but don't know. You'd recognize them on the street, but you don't know them. Sure. Their milkshakes arrived, and they headed back outside. Richard was standing there, clearly waiting for them.
I need to talk to you,
he said to Frances, starting to cry. Ava had been sent back to the car, where she was doubtless sorting through her Throwing Stars collection, waiting for her mother to get back within range. She had very much wanted to stay and hear the conversation, but Frances had been firm. Now she and Richard were standing on the street, 20 feet away, out of Throwing Star range, but Frances kept one eye on the car windows, making sure they stayed closed.
Is Anne okay?
Richard had stopped crying for a moment, but he didn't look all that composed. Frances shrugged. She's alive. Her life is fucked, but I guess you know that. He shook his head, and Frances realized he was both young and not as young as she had thought. He had to be 30, maybe a little less. He wasn't a child, he was a man, a grown man who could easily be a father, a husband, even an ex-husband. Suddenly she felt bad for him. Who knew what Anne and he had had together? It had been a bad idea, in her humble opinion, and not worth the price in any way whatsoever. But that didn't mean it didn't have some value.
She's not talking to me. I haven't spoken to her since I spoke to her husband.
His voice was full of tears, though his eyes were dry. You spoke to Charlie? Frances was confused. Richard looked at her, noticing the kindness in her eyes, feeling his own eyes fill with tears in the face of such obvious pity.
Yes, he answered her phone and told me to fuck off. He threatened to break my arm if I came anywhere near him and the kids.
He did? Frances suddenly grinned, unable to stop herself. She covered her mouth and tried to get it together. This was so very awkward. And just as suddenly, Richard grinned too, close to hysterics.
Yes, he was very articulate. I'm ashamed to say I had never really thought of him as an actual person, you know. I didn't know what he looked like. He was just the other man.
Frances stopped grinning. To be honest, he was the first man, the husband man, but I get it. She looked over at the car and caught Ava staring at them. Great. God only knew what she was making of this. Better wind up this weirdness. Didn't you realize this was going to happen? You're not a teenager. Richard wiped his face with the back of his hand, and Frances fought a desire to hand him a tissue.
I guess so. But I love her so much. I want to marry her. She won't speak to me.
He started crying again and stepped into Frances blindly. Someone else's son, but someone's child nonetheless, however tall he was.
She put her arms around him as he rested his head against her shoulder and cried and cried and cried. Frances patted his back, murmuring little mommy sounds as she had so many times in the last 14 years. She looked over at the car and saw Ava watching them with a surprisingly sympathetic expression. Next to her, Frances's chocolate malted was slowly melting in the heat of the car. God fucking damn it. 28. Yet another day dawned bright and clear. Sometimes Frances looked through the curtains and suspected Mother Nature of phoning it in. Really? Sun and blue skies again? Birds sang, flowers waved their frilly skirts and wafted perfume into the noses of homeless and hypocrite alike. And Frances hoped today would be less exhausting than yesterday. She scratched her boob and farted thoughtfully, which unfortunately alerted the dogs that she was awake and available to feed them. Jack stepped on her stomach in his enthusiasm and she cursed, struggling to sit up with a comic level of arm flailing. Life was full of such inelegant moments, and Frances felt she had far more than her fair share of them. She made it to standing without snapping a bone and headed to the bathroom. She'd gained 3 pounds. How was that even possible? It couldn't have been that third slice of banana bread, or the ice cream. She stepped off the scale and decided it must be sabotage by a foreign power. They were clearly after her. There was no other satisfactory explanation. She headed downstairs, followed by the dogs, who'd put on tap shoes, judging by the shocking noise. She stood in the kitchen doorway and thought for a moment they'd been robbed. Every drawer and cupboard door was open. Packaging was scattered on the counter. A half-empty milk carton stood insultingly close to the apparently locked refrigerator. Surely it hadn't been this bad the night before. Ava must have been up in the night, making herself a snack. Coffee. Let's just get to the coffee, people. Face reality in 10 minutes. Frances pulled the jug from the coffee machine, dumped the old grounds in the trash, and went to fill the jug with fresh water. It didn't start well. She inserted the faucet into the wide sleeve of her dressing gown and filled that instead of the jug, an experience that was so much less pleasant than you might think. She rolled up her dripping sleeve and tried again. That achieved, she fed the dogs, and while the coffee machine did its work, swept off the counters, closed all the drawers and doors, stepped in cold pee of some kind, swore, put down layers of paper towels, put half and half into a cup and wrote half and half on the shopping list. Then she put the pee-soaked paper towels in the trash, washed her hands, and couldn't find anything to dry them on. She used the nearest dog, wrote paper towels on the shopping list, and poured her coffee. It can only get better from here, she prayed, and headed back upstairs with her coffee to wake Ava. She made it far enough into Ava's room to open a single curtain before getting yelled at, inarticulately. Ava was not a morning person, so Frances had created a system of repeated, darting attacks, not dissimilar to poking a bear with a stick. First step, curtains. Second step, lamp. Third step, insertion of cup of tea. Usually that did it. It was in no way guaranteed, and every morning was Russian roulette. Optimal outcomes were sulky silence or grudging conversation. Less optimal would be full-on screaming and door-slamming. It was really a great way to start each day, and Frances was beginning to understand why parents were so relieved when their kids left for college. She went back down to get hot chocolate for the other two, feeling momentarily grateful for non-teenage children. Milo and Lally both woke up like little buds unfurling, smiling and reaching for their mom. She gave them each their hot chocolate and went back downstairs to fetch Ava's tea, pausing on the way to run in and turn on a lamp. She was yelled at again, this time with discernible words. It was working. After she delivered the tea, this time just muttering from under the duvet, which was progress, Frances went to get dressed herself. She took her time, flipping through the racks in her walk-in closet, spinning her shoe tower, and steaming her face to open her pores and maximize the effectiveness of her skin regime. None of that was true. She pulled on the same pair of jeans she'd had on the day before, and the hooded sweatshirt she found under them. Look, if they hadn't wanted to be worn a second day, they would have run away. But instead, they just lay there overnight, asking for it. She leaned over Michael, who, like his daughter, was not a morning person. Hey there. Coffee?
Go away, woman. It's the middle of the night.
Her husband groaned, sticking his head under his pillow and reaching behind himself to try and bat her away. It's after 7.
No.
Yes. Francis patted the pillow where she thought his head must be, but he just shuddered. He'd explained to her once that he and Ava slept more deeply than other people, and that for them, waking up was physically painful. He'd said,
"You know that bit in science fiction films where the crew of the spaceship wakes up from hypersleep and they're all throwing up and shivering?"
She'd nodded, but frowned skeptically.
"Well, it's like that for us."
"Every morning you wake up feeling like you've been traveling through space for several years in a state of suspended animation?"
"Yes. And with a feeling of terrible dread, like you've woken us up to go investigate a distress beacon from some alien planet or abandoned spaceship."
He'd looked pretty serious.
"It's terrible."
Nonetheless, Francis had continued to wake them up, but she did try to do it gently and with caffeine in hand. When she got downstairs again, Milo was already dressed and sitting on the sofa, eating Cheerios and watching SpongeBob. No one ever really saw him get dressed anymore. It was so quick. If you passed his room at the right time, you might hear a zipper or the whoosh of a sweatshirt passing over his head. But that was it. Then he'd make his way downstairs and get his own breakfast. Francis wasn't sure he was her child at all. Taking Michael his coffee, she checked on Ava and found her half-dressed, hunting through her drawers for some specific pair of socks that were almost certainly not where she was looking for them. Frances backed out before she could get blamed and went to help Lally. Lally wasn't a morning person either, but in a different way. She woke up filled with joy that another day had presented itself for her amusement and would wander about naked for a long time if you let her, playing with her toys and singing to herself. It was charming, but it was also deeply irritating when you needed to be somewhere, like school. And she resisted clothing as if she were a cat you were trying to get into a wetsuit. Not only did she not like the garment itself, she was convinced putting it on was only the beginning of her problems. However, Francis wheedled and cajoled, and then threatened and bribed, and eventually she was dressed. Francis looked at her watch. 15 minutes until departure. She went and checked on Michael, who was sitting up in bed looking like a baby chick who'd just gotten cold-cocked with a cricket bat. Wide eyes, staring, sheet marks. He looked at her and asked why the dog was wet. She explained. He nodded, cupping his balls under the sheet in case someone ran through and tried to take them. It could happen. "Okay, time to make lunches. Peanut butter and jelly for Lally, cheese for Milo." This year, second grade was a no-nut classroom. Francis threw in individual Tupperware containers of cherry tomatoes, secure in the knowledge she and they would meet again that evening. It was the same with the banana, but half the time she was making lunches for the teachers, imagining them looking into the lunchbox and nodding approvingly at her appropriate and healthy choices, and ignoring the Jell-O and the chocolate chip granola bars, which were the only things that ever got eaten. Ava appeared. She was wearing a sleeveless t-shirt that read, "Feminism is the radical notion that women are human beings," and Frances clucked her tongue at it. Ava frowned. "Go back upstairs and change. That is in no way dress code, and you know it."
"Because of what it says?"
"No," Francis said, "because it shows your shoulders." Ava opened her mouth to argue, but Francis held up her hand.
I know, it's bullshit. It's patriarchal overreach. It prioritizes the primacy of the male gaze over the individual right to self-expression, and it's a kick-ass t-shirt. I get all that. But last time they made you put on a Justin Bieber oversized hoodie, and someone posted it on Instagram and you were miserable. 20 minutes later, they all left the house. Kate and Theo were ready, standing outside the house with comb marks in their hair. Charlie was clearly bringing order to chaos, the poor sod. Then came Wyatt, who was holding a piece of toast in one hand and his shoes in the other. Then finally Lucas, who was carrying a plastic bag of Cheerios. Frances realized it was just the inner bag from the box of cereal, which she admired as an efficient choice. Right then. Time for school. At recess, Kate was cornered by some of the other girls in her class.
Hey, is it true your mom left?
Kate frowned and looked around. There were four of them, all of them girls she'd known since kindergarten. Allison, Gemma, Becky, and the other one whose name she could never remember. She nodded, but then shrugged.
I guess so. She's not living at our house right now. She's coming back soon.
Allison shook her head.
She's not coming back.
Allison was one of those kids who was always very definite in their opinions. Often wrong, but always definite.
Yes, she is,
Kate said, no wishy-washy kid herself.
They said they're having a problem right now. When that's over, she'll come back.
Allison sighed.
My dad was supposed to come back, but he didn't. And Leo's mother went away and was supposed to come back and didn't. They always say they're coming back, but it's not true.
Maybe this time it's true.
Another sigh. Ah, the innocence of youth.
No, it never is. Maybe you can go and live with her instead. That happens a lot, right?
She looked around for support. One of the other girls, Gemma, piped up.
My mom lives in a much nicer house than she did when we were all in the same place. She said now that she doesn't need to pay for my dad, she can afford a better place. I have a cat at her house, and a bike.
Kate considered this. Gemma had more details.
But when I stay with my dad, he lets me stay up late and watch TV with him on the sofa, and then I get to sleep in his bed.
Where does he sleep?
On the sofa. I guess he likes it.
Why can't you both sleep in the bed? Gemma shrugged.
It's not big enough. It's just a regular bed like I have at home, not a big parents' bed.
Where is your mom living? A ball came flying toward them, but Becky deftly returned it, displaying the superior reflexes of a 7-year-old. A clump of boys scattered as the ball plowed through them, like pigeons evading a toddler. One of them hurled insults at the girls for no reason, and Becky flipped him the bird.
I don't know where she is,
Kate realized suddenly, a feeling of panic starting in her tummy. The bell rang for the end of recess, and the girls turned to go inside. Suddenly, Becky put her arm around Kate and hugged her.
Don't worry, Kate. Everything will be fine. Hardly any of the kids in school have both parents at the same time. It's not that big a deal.
It felt like a big deal to Kate, but she smiled anyway. That night at dinner, Lally was incredibly bent out of shape. She wanted a different plate, a different spoon, a different pasta shape. Frances tried to convince her they all tasted the same, but Lally considered that a ludicrous argument, and Michael unhelpfully agreed with her.
I think the thicker shapes, the penne, the rigatoni, the farfalle, they definitely taste different from the thinner ones.
Like what?
Ava chimed in.
Spaghetti and angel hair?
No.
Frances felt pretty strongly about this. They taste different because of the way in which the sauce interacts with them.
Is interact the right verb? I think of pasta as pretty passive, I'll be honest.
Yes, Michael. It takes both pasta and sauce to make a taste.
Otherwise, we would just eat them on their own.
But I do want to eat them on their own.
Lally felt this conversation was getting away from her.
I just want spaghetti with butter and cheese.